Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Not only, of course, is Boris the new Prime Minister, he has also, of course, decided that his new Secretary of State, or Home Secretary, would be this wonderful young lady. I love her name, actually. Priti Patel. She's a lovely name. I just love that name. It's a wonderful name, isn't it? Now, Priti Patel is from India. I'm not going to read the whole thing that I spoke about today, but you get the general gist of it. She has said, of course, that when Brexit happens, it's not if, it's when Brexit happens, because Boris has been very clear about it. Brexit's happening, come hell or high water, in October, all right? So when Brexit happens, that there will have to be a new immigration policy. And the new immigration policy won't be, I'm not going to read out all her thing that I read out today, because she talks about, you know, welcoming diversity. She talks about, you know, people who come to the country with her aspirational, hardworking people who want to come there. But she said, absolutely, we invite them all. But because they are no longer part of Europe, bang goes the free movement of people. So you can't just wander in. Now, Irish people can, of course, because we have a separate deal with Britain, okay? So we can move between the two countries, all right? And we can work in the UK, etc. We've always had that deal before we were even in the EU. That's a separate deal, right? But Europeans and non-Europeans cannot go into Britain anymore without having a visa or a work permit, similar to the way you would the United States or Australia or any other country, because they're not part of Europe anymore. So she said they will have a new immigration policy, and part of that policy will be that you must be able to speak English, you must have a promise of a job, as you would in many of the visa circumstances if you go to Canada, the United States or Australia, and you also must have a promise of a job that's going to earn you more than £30,000 or €34,000, €36,000. And the reason for that figure is, well, according to what I heard today, the reason for that figure is that they don't want people going to the country reliant on social welfare or benefits to prop up their salaries because they're not earning enough to live. So at least that's a reasonable average wage. All right. So, and I'm asking, is this a good idea? Now, she has been condemned by the Mayor of London, who has said, you know, Sadiq Khan said this is just wrong. He said that sectors including construction, social care, hospitality would all be hit hard with these new restrictions on low-skilled immigration, because she said she doesn't want any unskilled people. She said she only wants skilled workers. Similar to Australia, mostly America, unless we're talking to Sean today, we mentioned the lotto system they have, which allows a certain amount of people in who are unskilled. And Canada and every other country. And supposedly Ireland, by the way, as well. But our immigration policy has actually gone down the toilet at this stage. But in any case, that's a whole other argument. But that's the point I'm talking about this tonight, is do you agree with her? She has been now accused, even though she's Indian and moved there herself back in the 1960s with her family, legitimately, by the way, can I point out, not illegally, legitimately, they moved to Britain. This is about a time when she was living in Uganda. And, of course, Uganda, or should I say Asian people, were moved, or Indian people were forced out of Uganda, and she moved to Britain with her family. But the point I'm trying to make is, do you agree with her? Some people have said this is racist, it's very Donald Trump-esque, it's wrong that you can't be telling people they can't move to the UK just because they're unskilled. I want to get your thoughts. Would you like to see Ireland do something similar? I don't even know why I'm asking this question in some sense, because we have done something similar in some sense, apart from the fact that we have to allow Europeans in because we have free movement of people. But non-EU citizens have a strict criteria for getting into this country, but you wouldn't think it. We may as well not have an immigration control at Dublin Airport or any of the ports in this country, because people can wander in and out of this country as if there's just no rules. That seems to be the way it is at the moment. But let's just talk about this. Should we have a strict immigration policy whereby you must be able to speak English, you must have a job offer, and you must be earning over €34,000 a year, which would be around the average industrial wage? Is that a good idea or is that a bad idea? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? Robert, you're on Classic Hits. How are you doing, Robert?
Hey, how's it going?
Sorry, Robert, I was waffling on a bit there. A little bit much, probably.
No, it's fine.
Robert, I mean, is it a good idea or is it a bad idea?
I think it's a fairly shoddy idea. I don't think it's very well thought out. I think it's just...
Why? What part is not well thought out, would you imagine?
Just the language part. I wouldn't have too much of a problem with the other...
With the skilled and the being offered a job. But why the language part? Surely for you to... I suppose, do well in a country, you know, in any occupation, you would have to have a good grasp or a working knowledge of the language.
Well, I think there's whole kind of sections in industries that isn't the case.
Well, if you're working, say, in a warehouse or somewhere where you didn't need to speak to anybody.
construction or, you know, like kind of kitchen porter type of jobs, stuff like that.
They
like,
would be generally unskilled workers, and they don't want unskilled workers. They said they have enough of them. So she's clearly saying, I don't want unskilled people, I want skilled people.
Yeah, well, I just don't think that's great. I think we do need unskilled labour. Like, the whole market relies on everyone having an alienable skill set.
I mean, if you move to China tomorrow, Robert, let's say, for example, you decided China looks like a nice place, I think I'll go there.
Picks off we go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't go there without having a basic knowledge of Mandarin, would you? I mean, what's the point? I mean, she couldn't communicate with anybody.
I think, de facto, I would have to once I was over there.
What, you think once you immerse yourself in the culture and the language, you might learn it?
I mean, if I had a job promised to me to go to China, like, I have the job and I've no Chinese, and once I get there, I think I will obviously have to start learning Chinese. But if I have the job that is already set up for me, I have the promise of that and I can go, I'm sure I could make do.
See, the argument is, of course, that many years ago, George Osborne, who was the Home Secretary, I think, at the time, or the Secretary of State, I can't remember what he was at the time, but he wanted to cut people off social welfare who didn't have a working knowledge of the English language, unless they were willing to go for English lessons, because he said there's no point. He said because they're limited in the amount of jobs they can actually get.
I think if you're paying taxes, that's irrelevant.
Well, if you're paying taxes, maybe it is irrelevant. But the problem is if you allow somebody in who can't speak English, and let's say they have a promise of a job. Let's say it's 34,000, but they can't speak English. And let's say they're working, I don't know, in some skilled job in tech, maybe, right? Yeah. Or some sort of tech company that happens to be Spanish, right? And their work colleagues are Spanish, so that's grand. They don't really need to communicate in English, right? But let's say they lose their job.
Yeah.
Then what happens? They're going to go on the dole. And they don't really have much of a chance of getting another job where you only have to speak Spanish. So the point is, it does limit people in getting employment because nowadays, very few jobs are for life.
That's true, yeah. But if you've been paying your taxes, I do think that's irrelevant.
You think it's irrelevant?
Yeah, I think...
I mean, the governments of the world will like to think that we're all going to work forever and never be claiming the dole and be paying taxes forever. And that's the whole way that economies work. It's based on the fact that people do that. Now, there is a little safety net there of social welfare, which is not an endless pit of money. So, but they don't want to be used in that. They would like to think that you're going to be in permanent employment.
Yeah, well, I would assume that's what the requirement for having a job promise is.
Yeah, but you're going to an English-speaking country.
Yeah, well, I think, facto, you will learn the language once you're there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me just see. Michael, you're on Classic Kids. Michael, Robert believes that once you get there, sure, you might have a good knowledge of the language after a couple of months anyway.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. You know.
No.
Don't sound too excited about the idea, Michael. You know what I mean? And just, you know.
No, I mean... I'm listening to Robert there, and it's all pretty emotional kind of stuff. It's not like calling it shoddy. I don't know where he's getting shoddy from. It's just basic, standard, practical practice, really, isn't it? Like, if you're going to emigrate to a foreign country, you should at least know the language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I don't think it's the place of the government to require that if you're already paying your taxes. I think government has no business in your personal life if you're paying your taxes.
Yeah, but you haven't paid your taxes if you haven't even entered the country yet. Like, what are you talking about?
Because you have the promise of a job in this scenario.
Yeah, but you don't have the promise of a job. Not everyone who emigrates to the country has a promise of a job.
No, that's part of the deal as well, Michael. That, you know, she's saying that to get into Britain, once Brexit happens, of course, be it from Europe or from outside of Europe, you will have to have a promise of a job. You will have to earn over 30,000, which is about 34,000 euro, and you will have to have a good working knowledge of the English language.
It's just really sensible talk. I think she's on the ball.
I mean, there's nothing unusual about that those kind of stipulations.
No, there isn't, no.
You know, I mean, Robert, I'm just curious, you know, how far you would go with this. Do you believe, for example, that there should even be that criteria of a promise of a job? Or do you believe that people should be able to experiment and pop into a country and see how they get on? And sure, if they don't get on well, they can go back home again. Do you believe people should be able to do that?
Well, that's the EU, isn't it?
Well, that's not working out too well, is it?
Yeah.
No, so I mean, but do you believe that, you know, this kind of whole free movement of people? Do you think it works?
I would not really. No.
Right. Well, then, if we're saying that doesn't work, there's a reason why it doesn't work. It's because unskilled workers are going from country to country and not getting jobs and living off the states.
So I would consider myself libertarian on the issue until the dole comes into it. I think you do, if you're paying taxes, then your personal life is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not.
Like, if I want to move to America, you know, generally speaking, unless I can get one of these special recognised visas, I have to have a promise of a job. Now, America obviously would be different as far as language is concerned, because the main language in America, a spoken language, is probably Spanish anyway. Not English. In many states.
Yeah, I think the issue should just be the promise of the job. I don't really see what the language has to do with it. Like, if you're coming in and you're going to be making money and you're paying your taxes, then, yeah, that's great.
Do you think, Michael, it's a bit tough? It's making it extremely tough for people to move to Britain?
No, look, I lived in London, and I can tell you, this whole idea has come from a place of people, a large amount of people not speaking the native language in that country.
Yeah, but they've already gone too far for that, haven't they?
Well, no, they can. This is a way of stemming it. You can turn off the tap, you know what I mean, and stop filling the bathtub here, if that's a good metaphor or whatever.
But they're all, if you're going to use that metaphor and analogy, they're already under the water.
Do you understand
what I'm saying? I mean, that kind of immigration has started in Britain 40 years ago, 50 years ago.
No, Ireland is in a worse state than the UK, because statistically, the UK, Ireland has a higher percentage of foreign people in terms of our population. The English don't. They still have a large British population. It's only in London and places that you see massive numbers. So most of England
According to the CSO figures, 1 in 7 people in this country is of foreign origin.
In Ireland?
Yeah, now depending on where you live, there are parts of Dublin, for example, where only 1 in 5 are actually Irish. So it depends on where you are. But generally, statistically in Ireland, 1 in 7 are non-Irish.
I think we're in a worse day. And I have to laugh at these Irish. I try not to get too caught up in the Irish media, but you see these Irish journalists really smugly laughing at the English and not really looking in their own back garden at the state we're in. We're in a far worse state. England has one of the highest economies in the world, and they have industries that far surpass us, outweigh us in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
We're still a colony in a lot of senses. We don't have industry. We don't have a military. We have nothing in this country. Nothing. So England are doing what they need to do, and we shouldn't be pointing the finger and judging them. We should be taking notes for our own. Because
you reckon it's coming down the road anyway.
Well, we're so close to them, Niall. It has to.
Okay, well, do me a favour, stay there, because I know Alan is waiting for a flight back to the UK as we speak. Alan, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Alan?
Hello, Niall. I'm waiting on a flight back to Ireland.
Oh, back to Ireland. Sorry.
I'm stuck in the UK due to this weather. But I've listened to what they've been saying. And I've worked in the UK I've been working actually in a skilled job since April. I was in an unskilled job before this in the UK, and I've only been over here since last year. But I think the UK are doing great for themselves with this whole Brexit arc. Easier to get out with the no deal and sort things out that way, but that's another subject. We're bringing people in. I worked in Ireland in a non-skilled job for a few years, and we brought people in from Europe, and it drove the wages down to minimum wage. People are happy to work. People come from Eastern Europe, were happy to work for minimum wage. And mm-hmm. here in the UK, it's the same. It is the same. Whereas you have people...
It's a race to the bottom, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what it was, yeah. And it took me a while to get myself up onto a decent ladder where I was in a skilled job. Now, I didn't go to college. I didn't do whatever, you know, the norm is. I got myself up onto a decent job, a decent wage and whatever. And I am in a skilled job now, so I'm happy that I'd be able to stay in the UK after Brexit, no problem.
Well, Ireland and the UK have always had a deal anyway.
We always had this. Now, I couldn't join the police force. I was surprised when I moved to England, I couldn't join the police force. I thought that deal... stretch that far, but
can you not? I know in Northern Ireland you can't. I know that, but
yeah,
I didn't know you couldn't if you didn't have a British passport.
Now, I signed up the minute I moved over here with the partner. I signed up and I was told, I'm sorry, regardless of where you're from, you need to be in the UK for 3 years.
Right, okay. And how long does it take to get a British passport?
I don't know. I'll probably never apply for one, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, so you won't be surrendering your Irish passport, no?
Well, no.
But you can carry both, by the way. You can keep both. Okay, so Alan, you agree with Priti Patel and what she's saying. You know, and you know, it is hardline stuff, the new immigration policy, that you have to be a promise of a job earning over 30 grand sterling, and you also have to speak English. Is that okay?
Well, maybe not the English part. I don't have a problem with someone coming over here.
But surely the English part is important. It's England, for God's sake.
Yeah, it depends on what job they're going for. If they're going for
the majority of jobs require you to speak.
Exactly, yeah. And multilingual jobs, you know, in the travel sector, I can understand. But yeah, you should have a basic understanding of English. I've worked in certain jobs over here, and I've worked in certain communities where they don't need to speak English because the community that they're surrounded by doesn't speak English.
But that's not such a good thing, is it?
It's not.
Because it's England.
A terrible thing. And that is why Brexit has gotten to the stage where we're... That's why Brexit got through. That's why everything is at the stage we're at.
Well, let me ask Robert that. Robert, that's a fair point. Now, he says there is communities over there where you wouldn't need to speak English, but that's not such a good thing, Robert, because it is England and they should be still... You know, even though they welcome diversity, they should be proud of their heritage.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the point that he's making is that the only way that you might get a job is in a community where they don't speak English. So you do need English to get your average job.
Yeah, you do, yeah. But if you have the promise of a job, then that should be the criteria.
That should be enough, really, like.
Yeah. As long as you're paying the taxes, I think that's as far as...
I understand that. I understand that. But the lower paid jobs over here... The reason why they're low paid is because there's people from other parts of Europe that are willing to do them low paid because the low pay here is actually the equivalent to the high pay where they're from. And people here won't do the low pay jobs.
What's the minimum wage in the UK now? 8.25, is it?
God. My partner, right, because my partner, if you're 18, we have a completely backward system over here, Niall, and I've only learned this. If you're 18, you can learn the minimum wage is like £5 something. If you're over 24 or 25, it goes up to about £8. But if you're under 24, you're not entitled to the same amount of minimum pay if you're under 24.
Yeah, their laws are all a bit bonkers over there, to be honest.
I still don't know it, to be honest. Yeah. But I'm just saying, it is minimum wage work, and the Eastern Europeans are the ones who are doing it.
And what are you doing, by the way, what are you doing coming home? Do you come home regularly?
I'm not. I'm coming home for a family emergency, unfortunately.
All right. Well, I hope everything's all right.
Well, you know, a funeral tomorrow. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
And then I'm back. I'm back. I'm back then.
And can I ask an honest question? Ireland or England? Apart from your mates in the pub, which do you prefer? Which do you think you have more potential in?
Sorry to say, but England. We couldn't afford Dublin. That's why we moved out of Dublin.
And whereabouts in England are you living? Where are you in England?
I'm central. I'm in Birmingham. Birmingham now. But
property prices are lower, yeah.
We're paying £750 a month for a house in a really high end area, whereas in Dublin we're paying very lucky to be paying £1,100 for the 2-bed house.
You wouldn't get a shed for that in most parts. You're paying £900, I assume.
No, we're paying £750.
£750. Okay, yeah. It's about €900.
The difference is we were surviving in Dublin, but we're actually living in Birmingham. You know, we're actually enjoying life, better quality.
Okay, and so you're living in Birmingham, close to the city, and you're paying £900 for a 3-bedroom house in a nice area.
Roughly speaking.
Well, that's certainly an incentive for people to want to go, isn't it? Let me just go to Ray. Thanks for that, Alan. I know you're kind of rushed there to get a flight. Alan, or Ray, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Ray? Oh, hang on, I've got to turn you on, Ray. Sorry, Raymond. Raymond, go ahead.
You know, listening to the conversation, the way I look at it is English wouldn't bother me. It would be more, has the guy been Garda vetted?
Yes.
You know, because the simple fact is that, you know, I want to know who is coming into the country. Whether he can speak English or not wouldn't really matter.
Well, I imagine when the new immigration policy comes in after Brexit, everybody will have to be, you know, completely vetted, because it'll be like... When you want to go to America, you have to go into the American embassy and make an application, fill out a form. yeah. and everybody gets a background check before they'll say yes.
Yeah, but here in Ireland and in the UK, there's no background check.
Well, not at the moment there isn't, no.
Yeah, I saw
it's a free-for-all.
I mean, no, free-for-all, and like it, as I said,
yeah.
you don't know who's moving in alongside you. So English wouldn't bother me once I knew that Johnny, who moved in next door, is a good upstanding citizen that's going to contribute to the neighbourhood.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like we have here in Ireland, anyone can come in, just hop on the ferry or a plane and you can come in and do what you like and no one bothers you.
That's a fair point, Michael. Under this new policy, Michael, Ray makes the point, at least we know people would be vetted somewhat, or that we would do background checks rather than the kind of willy-nilly approach we have at the moment as being part of Europe.
I know, it's mind-blowing that people can just come in here with not knowing who they are. Like, and
that's it. Well, that we signed up for it, didn't we? Allegedly.
Yeah, and I'm like, I mean, on that, if you look at kind of the Middle East there, right, so you have that whole thing that was going on in Syria, right, and now the people who are out of Syria are the ones who were the ISIS guys, and they can't go back to Syria. So they're being sent all around the world, mostly men, and we're being told that they are the innocent women and children that they were actually killing.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, this is the mind-boggling part. Well, you know what,
I think this immigration policy that Britain are bringing in is going to be a bigger problem for us. Because a lot of people want to go to an English-speaking country, particularly if they're coming from parts of the Middle East where they speak English, right? So they're going to the continent of Africa. So they're going to come here, India, Pakistan. They're going to come here because they can't go to Britain anymore.
We've such a small population. Like England is 670 million, or so, and we've like 5 million, less than 5 million.
4.7, yeah.
Can you, all the main streets in every town in Ireland won't be Irish people walking up and down them, you know?
Let me ask Robert, because he's a libertarian. Robert, you know what I mean, this idea that when Britain closes its doors, in 93 days, which essentially they will be, it'll be strict, Ireland is going to be the country of option, you know, when it comes to anybody who wants to go to an English-speaking country in Europe. Is that concerning, do you think, Robert? Oh, he's gone. Oh, I lost Robert. Well, let me just... I'll ask Anthony the same question. Sorry, Anthony. Are you there?
Hi, Niall.
Anthony, do you think that's a worry for Ireland?
I'm wondering. I was actually thinking about that earlier on. Funny that you should mention it. Will it be a good thing or a bad thing? For the flight, they'll have to come through England, so that could actually put a stop to it. But by sea, I don't know. Will it put a stop to it? You know that there'll be more checks, so... But
if they've to come through the UK through Heathrow Airport, they'll be going to the lounge where you actually don't go to immigration, where you're transferring to another flight. You don't have to go to immigration because you're transferring.
The Niall Boylan lounge,
yeah, whatever. Yes, yeah. So you're transferring from gate to gate, and you don't have to go to immigration because you're not actually staying in the country.
Yeah.
So that's not going to affect England. So in other words, somebody could come from, be it Pakistan, India, wherever it is, and have a flight through Heathrow into London, into Dublin. Their first port of call, so to speak, as far as immigration is concerned, is going to be Dublin.
But I think they mean business, all right. I mean, I was just looking at Boris there now about a half an hour ago on Sky News, choking his chicken up in Wales.
What was he doing?
And choking a chicken. He was in a chicken factory in Wales.
And he was literally choking the chicken.
No, you know what that's slang for.
I know, I'm just trying more. I didn't see the clip you seen. Right.
It was kind of disturbing. The chicken looked disturbed.
Right.
But he means business.
He does mean business, and I mean,
there's no point, Leo. What's Leo going to do? Meet up with him and see if they match in jocks and socks.
So every time somebody mentions his name, I get a chill up my spine. I don't know what that's about. Ray, are you a Fine Gael fan, Ray?
I used to be Niall.
Yeah, I kind of get a chill up my spine when somebody mentions Leo's name now.
Yes, correct, because he's not a leader.
No, he's not. He's over in Europe, you know. Swanning around over there, hanging out with the people in Europe, with the EU, when he should be talking to Britain. I mean, he should have been for the last 2 years. We have no plan B.
No.
Niall, I agree with your father earlier on.
Ray, say it again.
He's over in Europe, hanging around with all the ex-ministers.
Yeah, looking forward to his new job.
That they got big jobs over with lots of money and cush the happy old hair lads.
Mm.
They got away with it. They ruined this country and ran off to Europe themselves with big pensions.
Yeah, so, sorry, Michael wanted to say something there. Sorry, Michael.
No, that was the other guy.
Oh, was it? Sorry, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Hansi.
Now, one thing that Margaret Thatcher did get right, I know she was Marmite. Some people hated her. And
I liked Margaret Fuller, yeah.
I did in my own way as well. They kept their sterling. And I don't really see the point of the euro, to be quite honest with you, because, like one of the earlier callers said, 50 euros here will do very little for you, but 50 euros in some crappy Eastern European country will probably feed you for a month,
mm-hmm.
you know, and keep you in luxury.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no equality, there's no level playing field, and you can sit at home in some crappy Eastern European country and work for the minimum wage, and know you're never going to get social welfare. Children's allowance doesn't go into double figures in some of these countries. Or you can move over to Ireland and work for 6 months on a crappy minimum paid wage job, and you can get children's allowance for your children. That'd be probably a month's pay back home in your own country. And once you've done that for a couple of years, you can move back. It's not a level playing field. That's why I think the whole European project, I hope actually that Brexit will be a success. I think there'll be probably a course. The transition period will...
No, there's going to be 10 years of a bit of a mess, probably. It'll take 10 years. And somebody rightly says here, Britain will still allow Commonwealth citizens. It's Europeans that will have the issues. Well, Europeans and people from outside of Europe, unless they happen to be in the Commonwealth. Albert says, hi, Noel Edmonds got into trouble for saying in public, England is full. I agree with him. Well, I don't think any country is ever full.
Within
reason, China was kind of full at one stage, but I don't think it's full. I mean, I think what happens is you have a limited population for the amount of, I suppose, money that's being made, and provided you increase your population slowly, you know, the economy can sustain that. Sorry, yeah, Anthony.
But Niall, we give asylum to people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
and I just think, like, there's the EU, there's the Commonwealth. Why are we getting all these people from Commonwealth countries coming over here seeking asylum? Surely they should go to another EU or another Commonwealth country rather than coming to an EU country.
Absolutely.
And stop jumping along, jump-frogging along and hopscotching along through Europe and landing in France and landing in Germany and landing in England and then finding your way over here. We're a pack of fools, like. We're the bigger Egypt. And we can't soak it up. We have to be the best in the class at everything, like, oh, aren't we fantastic? Oh, we're brilliant. We love it, and we love migrants and everything. We heard there a fortnight ago, there's 700 people in direct provision that have to stay there because there's nowhere for them to live. There's nowhere for the indigenous people to live, let alone the people in direct provision. And there's still more coming in.
And those numbers are increasing by the month, the amount of people that are coming into Ireland. Also, but let me get back to the language if I possibly can. And I want to come to James after the break. James, we're going to have to take a quick break, so please stay with me. Do you believe that people should have to speak English to live in England? That's one of the requirements under the new immigration policy. Sean's not very happy yet. Sorry, Sean, I'm only joking. What a disingenuous argument. Lack of fluent English skills. Well, no one said fluent English. You know, I did say a working knowledge of the language, Sean. Lack of fluent English skills is not a barrier to employment for millions of immigrants to the USA, says Sean. Sean, you cannot compare the United States of America to the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is British. I was saluting there. The United Kingdom is British, and they speak English, generally speaking, all across the United Kingdom. In the United States, of course, is very different, Sean, because in many states, English may not be even the first language. For example, when you look at New York, the most popular radio station in New York is a Spanish-speaking radio station. Where I was in Florida, the most popular radio station is a station called Rumba, which is Latin American. So, you know, Sean, you cannot compare the melting pot that is the United States to Britain when it comes to language. Sorry, just put you back in your place there. And maybe you'll have an argument against that. I'm sure you will. Okay, keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 0871880008 and let us know, do you agree with Priti Patel, the Home Secretary of England, Great Britain, who has now said that when Brexit happens, there will be a new immigration policy, will make it very tough to get into England. James, or Great Britain for that matter. James, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, James?
How's it going, Noel?
Well, how's it going, James?
Good evening.
Good evening to you. James, do you believe this is a good plan? I mean, it might be a little bit OTT, is it?
no, perfectly understandable. You know, it was a bit bonkers, I think, for a while.
Well, more than a while, probably.
Well, you see, a lot of people...
But is it not too late? Are they not, you know, closing the door after the horse has bolted, so to speak?
Well, you see, right there, I think the birth rate for Britain is 2.1, so they're at replacement level, but they're not at growth. So if I was them, what I'd actually try to do is stimulate birth rates among the population that you have.
Right.
To mix with one another. And then after a couple of generations, you would have what they'd call British, you know.
Indigenous people again.
Indigenous, exactly. Exactly. Slow to stem. Stem the slow flow and sorry. And, you know, try and increase your own birth rates.
And is it important that a country keeps its indigenous traditions and cultures?
Well, I wouldn't like to see the countries become balkanised. So I wouldn't, I don't think, I think...
Well, look, look at America, for an example. America doesn't have any real tradition as such or culture because it's a melting pot of all different traditions and cultures. And generally speaking, with the exceptions of the odd stories we hear every now and again, it seems to work in most states. Some states are an exception.
Yep, you see, because the indigenous argument is basically irrelevant and nobody has claim over
that. That's what I'm saying. Well, that's the point I'm making.
You know?
There is no indigenous as
well,
such.
There is. But they're like 1-2% of the population, I think.
Yeah.
Could be a bit bigger now, but that's...
I'm sure Sean will correct us on that and tell us, you know.
So, you know, so when you have a long-standing population who has established themselves, built the country, in their eyes, let's say, the culture, the customs, the tradition, internationally it's known for X, Y, and Z, I think the change that can be quite a volatile thing to do. I don't think it's...
Okay, well, what about the language? Now, I know Sean will make the argument that in America that's not a criteria, and it's not a criteria because, of course, there's many languages spoken in the United States of America, although English would be the most acceptable language, but certainly not the most spoken in some states. But
it's the language of commerce.
It is the most common, even for people who don't speak English, it's the second language. But in saying that, you know, Britain obviously is English, or it's British, and they speak English. But is it a necessity, as Robert made the point earlier on, that sure, if you're going and you have a promise of a job, so what's the problem if you don't speak English? You can learn it.
But I'd say for the immigrants' experience also, and not to be exploited, it's as much as an essential for them as it is...
Well, you're not going to be exploited if you're applying for a visa.
But that's not necessarily true,
no. No, well, I mean, under the new immigration policy, you will have to apply for a visa. You will obviously have to apply to your local embassy if you're living in Poland or wherever it happens to be, or India. So you'll have to apply to an embassy. You will have to prove who you are and what you are, and, you know, and you have to prove that you have a good enough job to go there and sustain yourself. So from those grounds, you're not going to be exploited, I would hope. Mm.
No, well,
unless you lose that job.
Still happens in Britain today, you know, of low-skilled workers, in quotes, people who don't speak the language, get the passports taken off them, etc. That's actually a problem in Britain.
I know, but under the new immigration policy, that shouldn't be a problem. If that's a problem, that needs to be rooted out.
Exactly.
That's a separate issue.
Yes, but is that not a way to root it out?
I don't think so, because that's still going to happen. You're still going to have people coming to England illegally.
Of course, but from Calais. Have you seen Calais?
Yeah. So even when this immigration policy comes in, people are still going to manage to sneak into Britain, right? We know that. And there are going to be people who will sneak in who can't speak English and who are going to be exploited. So that's up to, you know, the immigration control to sort that out, and up to the police in the United Kingdom to sort that out. So that's still going to be an issue. That's not going to change.
Do you think so? I think for the benefit and the chances of the immigrant themselves integrating into the wider community, it'd be a much easier, you know, transition rather than having that language barrier, because then sometimes they can absorb into, let's say, there's a Croatian community here. So they'll just absorb into the Croatian community and get very, very little English and contact with outside peoples, let's say. That is common.
Well, I know. We see that here. There's places in Dublin, for example, where you would only meet Polish people, you know, and there are places in Dublin where you might only meet a lot of African people. So, yes, we do. But Irish people do that too in America. There's Irish communities.
Exactly. But I genuinely believe that's human nature, because people don't actually like to change, really. They like to stay within what's familiar to them.
Well, let me go to Sean. Well, hang on. Let me go to Sean. Sean, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, how's it going now?
Sean, now, I don't think it's fair to compare the United States when we talk about language.
All right, but before we get to that now, what am I wearing?
What are you wearing?
Yeah.
I'm guessing jeans and a T-shirt.
Close. because it's amazing. You already appear to know exactly what I'm going to be saying. So I'm just, it's amazing. You're like a psychic. You've got me right on the wavelength. Fantastic.
Go on. That was just smart, Arshan.
Better smart arse than a dumb arse. Anyway, back to the subject matter. Yes, what was your question?
The question was in relation to language. Your text suggests that, well, look, language is not an issue in the United States, so why should it be an issue in the United Kingdom? And my argument is, well, because the United Kingdom is predominantly British-speaking, whereas in the United States, although Britain would be the most, or English would be the most common language, in some states it's not the most spoken language.
Right, but that's just at the current time. You were the German was actually almost the official language of the United States right after its founding, actually. There was about a quarter of the population that's what they spoke was German back in the 1780s. These things change in time. They change over time. And generally, people, when they move to a culture, the first generation struggles with the language, and the second and third usually assimilate nicely. At least that's the American experience anyway. I have worked with Polish people here in Ireland that have varying degrees from fairly fluent to almost no English at all, and it didn't seem to affect their ability to show up every day to work and pay their taxes. And
it does. Does it not limit the amount of jobs they can get?
Perhaps, but it's
perhaps.
Not.
Perhaps it does, Sean. There's no perhaps about it. Of course, it does.
Are you going to be applying for a rocket surgeon, rocket science job at NASA tomorrow? I mean, everybody has limited in their choices of jobs.
Be logical, Sean. You know, the majority of jobs, you know, in this country, the majority, not all, but the majority of jobs would have a situation where you may have to communicate with the general public. So, on those grounds, you're immediately eliminated from all those jobs.
Right. Okay. I'll grant you that. And that means what does that mean?
Well, it means that you are limited in getting employment if you lose. Say, for example, if you go by the current criteria they want to bring in Britain. So let's say you have a promise of a job at 30 grand. You get over there. Let's say, as I mentioned to somebody, it's a tech company where all your mates are all Spanish and you're Spanish. That's fine. You don't speak English. That's grand. You can get on quite well. But you lose the job. Mm-hmm. What are your possibilities of gaining employment after you've lost the job? Probably slim if you can't speak English.
Well, if there's enough people there that speak Spanish, you can found your own firm. Again, that's the experience when you have immigrant communities become large enough, they form their own businesses.
But then the whole idea of integration, that does not happen.
Again, we're talking about first generation, second generation. This is a long process that happens over time. Yeah, I understand that first generation tends to be a bit rocky, yes.
Well, why if it wasn't an issue, why did George Osborne only 2 years ago suggest that he was going to stop unemployment benefit for people who didn't bother to learn English?
Probably because in an effort to obtain votes, I would imagine.
Well, no, he was saying they were limited in employment, and there's no point, because, of course, the rules of social welfare is that you have to be available for employment. Right. And if you can't speak English, well, you're not kind of really available for all types of employment, are you?
Again, that's a fairly disingenuous
argument.
I could get a job at McDonald's in Kinshasa.
Interview process, Sean?
It depends. It depends on on the nature of the job. You'll have to ask my Polish friends at the pallet factory where I work. Some of them could speak literally 10 words of English, and it didn't seem to interfere with their ability to operate heavy machinery in a dangerous industrial environment. Work as a team with people who didn't actually speak the language themselves. It is possible.
Okay.
And again, it really...
Do you not accept it limits the choices?
But a country isn't just an economic hub, Sean.
Yes, it does limit the choice.
when you want to have immigration in a country and legitimate immigration and you want to, obviously have a diverse country, there's no problem with diversity. Diversity is a good thing by times.
Okay, so let's flip this argument around then. Let's say the physicist coming from Mumbai or the IT specialist from Shanghai, are they going to be able to sweep floors at McDonald's or, are they going to be able to be bin men?
I'm not saying that. Of course, there's jobs where people, there are specialists that come in that may not speak English. I'm well aware of that. And those people are very skilled specialists generally.
No, what I'm saying is that there's some people who won't be considered for any job regardless.
But laws are made and usually made with a blunt instrument. And I understand there are always going to be exceptions to the rule. And maybe those exceptions could be part of a consideration by an immigration control. If, for example, you're applying for a visa and you happen to be a rocket scientist from India, that's fair enough. And maybe they will take that into consideration that you have a very special skill, similar to the United States, where they have specialist type visas for somebody who has a special skill.
And ironically enough, if you've got a job that only 20 people in the world can do, and you lose that job, your odds of getting another job are far less than the person who can go out and sweep floors or do dishes.
Well, it's not that your odds of getting it are slimmer. Your odds of wanting to do it are slimmer.
I thought the concern was just that they have a job and pay taxes and not be on welfare. Is it, were you trying to make everybody who comes to this country a millionaire? Is that the goal?
Well, James, let me ask James. James, is the language, you know, part of this? I understand maybe, you know, the salary, you know, because you want people to be able to sustain themselves without having to give them, you know, social welfare benefits. I can understand, you know, the background checks and all that kind of carry on and that you want skilled workers. But is the language part, as Sean says, a bit OTT?
No, well, once again, it's essential. Because
it's not essential, but it's certainly helpful.
It is not essential. It may be preferable, but it's not essential.
Hold on. So for a person to integrate into the wider society, they have to be able to communicate. Mm-hmm. If they cannot communicate with people, how will they integrate? If there's no integration, there's balkanization. It's a bit
simple. What is it that marks integration? Is it the ability to have a job? Is it the ability to go on the Niall Boylan show and speak eloquently in English on all topics, sundry and the sun? What is it that makes somebody integrated? The goalposts are constantly shifting. At first it's, you know, oh, we have to protect jobs, and it's, oh, we don't want to pay taxes for the welfare, then it's, oh, we want to keep terrorists out.
Because you have the American philosophy, John, because you have the American philosophy of life. That's the difference. You do not understand that about the European political system.
Well, America has a lot of completely different philosophy. But again, you want to look at the fraction of countries letting in immigrants. America has done pretty well to become the most powerful country in the world in only a couple hundred years.
Okay, one at a time. Let James just respond. Hang on, Sean. Let James respond.
Sure. America was a country built by immigrants. European countries are civilizations, ancient civilizations, or ancient peoples. It's two completely different political.
Well, would that be fair to say the world has changed, James?
The people living in Greece now are the same Greeks that were there in Socrates' times. The people living outside Rome now are the same ones that were there in Caesar's times. The people in France, really?
So you're actually denying... Okay, so let's say Indo-European haplogroups, yes, they are still the dominant haplogroups across the continent. Of ancient ancestors.
Now you're mixing biology with culture. I thought we were discussing culture, not biology.
But I'm explaining the political philosophies, the difference. The way you look at immigration is purely as you describe it. It's the American form of immigration. We are talking about the European form of immigration. They're two completely different philosophies.
Yeah, the European
form of immigration. They're seen as two completely different things.
What I'm arguing is that the older form of European integration, which involved mass armies on the move, actually taking over land and raping the natives and assimilating with them.
As soon as this debate comes up, you do know you're going to get straight on to European colonialism. You do know that.
James,
you do have
Europe
a history pre-colonialism.
Europe was the leader of the world for several hundred years. And it was not because it kept itself sealed off from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. It was invaded repeatedly over and mm-hmm. over again by different mm-hmm. immigrant groups. The Slavs moved into Greece in the 8th century in Greece. The Germans moved into Italy and France in the 6th century. The Arabs, the Moors moved into Spain in the 7th and 8th century.
Yes.
All these changes. There's been countless changes of population here. This has nothing to do with whether you're going to have a productive society or not.
I say there's been 2 to 3 changes of populations here that actually have mixed into their own ethnic group. That's what I'm saying. And the same in Britain. Exactly what you're saying. It was slow movements in, like I said earlier, your attachment to ethnic groups is ridiculous.
It's not logical. Because you're looking at surface characteristics. No, I'm not.
Okay, oh, so are you denying the fact the people who inhabit France now, right, the majority ethnic group in France.
Actually, there's an interesting text in relation to that. He says, after the Norman conquest of 1066, the French quickly replaced English in all domains associated with power. French was used at the royal court by the clergy, the aristocracy and the law courts, but the vast majority of the population continued to speak English. And somebody else mentions, by the way, here, Russell in Wexford says, Niall, when the initial influx of immigrants came from the West Indies, they integrated into the UK society. They drove buses, on the tubes, were postmen and such like. I'm a Brit now living in Ireland circa 20 years, and I've seen Ireland become how the UK was when I left. More and more unskilled foreigners with little or no English language. The UK is now taking a stand, says Russell in Wexford. You can't argue that, Sean. You know, the people, and we have to value the people's opinion, as we did in the United States, although you're not happy about that. But we have to value the people's opinion, and the people of Britain have spoken democratically, and they said, we don't want the free movement of people anymore.
Right. They said by a slim margin they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. Yes, I understand that. I'm not against democracy. That's fine with me. They're idiots. That's fine, but that doesn't directly concern me. But I really don't
but
want
they're
to
living there,
happening.
Sean. You're your not. Question, they know what it's like.
Your question was referring to this country. I don't want to see that happen in this country. If they want to be idiots, that's fine.
Are you suggesting half the population of Britain are idiots? Well, more than half
issue,
the population.
Yes, I think it was a really stupid decision to vote to leave Brexit. And by the way, I agree with Helena. There's not going to be a Brexit. I'll bet you that as well.
Hard.
I'll get in on that.
Hard.
Helena's smiling and cheering in the background here.
It's
going
to be 99% sure now since Boris got in. It's going to be a hard Brexit.
I've just given you my prediction. There'll be a general election at the start of September to mid-September. Boris Johnson will be the Prime Minister, continue to be the Prime Minister, obviously.
And Nigel Farage
will be the Deputy Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. And there will be a Brexit with no deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll now, they may get an extension on the backstop for 5 years. That's about the only part of the deal they actually might get.
And why are you chiding the Irish government, by the way, and not bending over backwards for Britain? Are you Irish or British now?
I'm absolutely Irish, but at the end of the day, I'm looking after the Irish interests, but I don't believe that Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar are. I believe Simon Coveney, well, particularly Leo Varadkar, is looking after his own interest by being over in Europe. At the end of the day, it's their Brexit, not ours. We can't be blackmailing the British government by saying, listen, the only way you can have a Brexit is by not having a border.
So I live in a housing estate within a semi-attached house. If my neighbor decides to burn his house down, it's none of my concern by that.
No, if your neighbor wants to burn his house down, I suggest you talk to your neighbor first. And if you can't come to some sort of agreement with your neighbor, then you go to the Garda Síochána, i.e. Europe. Mm-hmm. So in other words, we talk to Britain first, and then we go to Europe, not the other way around. That was plan A. Plan A by Leo Varadkar was to go and side up with Europe and go up their arses. Plan B should have been that we spoke to the British, but we don't have a plan B. Because we didn't bother, because we were so arrogant about the fact that we felt we needed a backstop.
And there's no application of that term arrogance to the British, only to the Irish.
Well, the British are doing democratically what the people have asked for.
Right, and how they're deciding to treat their neighbors there's not even a touch of arrogance there.
Well, I mean, what could they do?
With
the greatest respect, they have already come up with a few plans. Theresa May did come up with, you know, and I thought Theresa May did a reasonably good job. She tried her best. It was an impossible situation, a poison chalice. She even suggested a border down the centre of the Irish Sea, which was never going to happen because the Northern Irish people. We're never going to agree with that because half of them believe they're British.
I agree with that. So there's not even a touch of arrogance in your buddy Priti Patel when she said in December about, you know, well, you know, the...
Oh, yeah, I know what she said, yeah, for the Irish people.
Shortages in Ireland, yeah, they should use
She was suggesting almost starving the Irish people, yeah, I know.
There's no arrogance at all in that state.
Well, she is a bit arrogant about that, but in this I probably agree with her.
Oh, okay, you will concede that.
Yeah, I will, yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, she almost suggested starving the Irish people.
Yeah, charming.
Yeah.
She's Home Secretary. What a lovely woman. I hope she doesn't die in a fire tonight. That would be terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry. So, James, getting back... Yeah, I mean, you do know about Priti Patel, don't you? Nice name and all as it is.
I do.
She did suggest, you know, draining the Irish people of British goods and food.
Yeah. I think it was loose talk, to be honest.
She was condemned for saying it by Theresa May, by the way.
If you and I do that's not crime of extortion if with private citizens.
Mind you, I did see on Twitter today, somebody reasonably prominent was suggesting, I think I might actually have it in a tweet here, hang on, was suggesting that... the British should invade Ireland peacefully but using military style.
Yeah, Helena has that on her Twitter, I saw her.
It sounds very interesting.
You'll be there bowing.
He would, actually.
The Union Jack wrapped around you.
How could I assist you, sir?
Although Timmy Dooley, the TD, has now said the standoff with our nearest neighbour is a direct result of the Taoiseach of Varadkar's failing to engage in basic diplomacy over the last 2 years. The government's lack of experience and arrogance will hurt Ireland in the coming months.
Yep, just like Trump, you know, it's always somebody else's.
That's Timmy Dooley. He's a TD, by the way. Sorry, yeah.
No, Leo thinks because he has Germany on his side.
And a nice new suit.
And he can be a very...
And he's friends with Kylie Minogue.
Exactly.
I'd rather have Germany in my side of Britain.
I don't think so, Sean. Looking at how Germany treated people with austerity, they're no friend.
I'm talking about economic terms. Germany is ahead of Britain.
Yeah, but also for Germany to have an economic advantage, the southern states have had to suffer massively. So Germany can have low artificial rates to keep the import
infrastructure subsidies as well from Germany.
Yeah, but Germany's the only one with an export surplus.
Right.
So if someone's run a surplus, someone has to run a deficit. And it's turning into Europe into a cheap labour sector.
My best friend
at the expense of Southern Europe.
I've heard extensively about how it affects the Germans. I'm not saying I'd want to live in Germany, but as far as being part of a common polity with Germany as part as the leader, I would rather have that than have a failing,
well, just before I wrap it up, by the way, I just found this tweet. Yes, I think we, in brackets the UK, should simply invade Ireland, brackets military-wise, peacefully, as there wouldn't be a resistance. Dissolve the Irish government partially. Job done. Ireland leaves with the rest of the people that have been carrying it for centuries. I mean, in fairness, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but in fairness, I mean, being a republic, we have failed miserably over the last 100 years. We have never been able to do it on our own. What's the deafening silence for lads?
As opposed to who, Niall? Norway? Denmark?
No,
Hungary,
we've always been run by somebody.
Well, Niall, you need to consider the situations we found our freedom in.
But hang on. We were invaded by the British. We were then, obviously, we were governed by Great Britain. As soon as Great Britain let go and we got our so-called independence, we were run by the Catholic Church and canon law and Pope Pius. As soon as that was finished, we were part of Europe. So we never really had independence, did we?
I think for the government of the day, when we got our independence, they used the Catholic Church as a crutch while they were having a trade war with Britain, who actually owned, what was it, almost two-thirds of the globe at that stage, dominated global trade.
Do you not think we'd be better off as part of the common market or as part of the Commonwealth?
No, because I think we were so small in those affairs. When
we still are small. We still are small.
Yeah, we still, exactly.
Right. But I for a small country... Independence is not necessarily a great thing for a small country. You're going to have some degree of dependence on a larger global political entity. If you want to have any influence at all, if you're just going to be a road bump, nobody's going to give a shit about you.
Nobody gave a shit about Ireland for years anyway.
Well, Britain seems to be giving a shit about
Ireland. Well, they do now.
Because we've got 450 million Europeans behind us as well. So, yeah, that does kind of give a little bit more of a...
Absolutely. You know, now, when you go back to the 1960s, nobody gave a shit about Ireland. Nobody even knew it existed.
Right, exactly. You want to go back to that?
No, I want to be part of something bigger. But I don't think the European model is working too well. I don't think the EU model is working. That's going to be knackered in about 10 years.
We have 5% unemployment here. This is one of the richest, most peaceful countries in the world.
Yeah,
what the hell do you want? What do you expect?
You're looking at Ireland, okay? And in the realms of the European Union, which has one of the biggest GDPs, it's very easy to pump a country like Ireland full of funny money. But when you look at the bigger states like Italy, France.
But they could be gone soon.
Right, Spain. Stagnation.
Yeah,
you know,
dream
Spain
on now. Dream.
Spain, Italy could be gone soon. I'm telling you. Sure. That's my next bet.
All right, well, I'll bet you you're double betting on that as well.
Right, does anybody want to take a bet with me on the general election?
Of whom?
I reckon there'll be a general election mid-September in Great Britain. And the outcome will be Nigel Farage will be the Deputy Prime Minister.
Party and Brexit Party. Niall, yes. That was my exact prediction.
Yeah.
Right, and Niall, regardless of what...
I'm not ripping you off, by the way, James. I did come up with that on my own as well, you know.
Of course you did, Niall. I'm sure you did. But, right, actually, I text that into you now.
Did you?
I did. I think I did. About
I don't know if you did. When Boris was chosen.
Mm-hmm. But, look, I reckon that's the turn of events that's going to happen. A lot of Irish people here, I think, have been led up to Pat by Fine Gael. I don't really think they understand how serious the Brits are.
No.
I don't really think it's going to be a second referendum.
No,
definitely it's going to be, it's like crunch time.
There will be no second referendum. That has been guaranteed more or less already.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson has more or less clarified that there won't be a second referendum.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.